a follow-up meeting with the Minister of Transport following our oversight in January and in March to PRASA Gauteng and PRASA Western Cape. And of course, we have already met with the board of PRASA. Of course, amongst other things which have subsequently happened is that PRASA had not tabled its annual report to Parliament, and as indicated to members, it now has been tabled, and it is a disclaimed audit outcome. So as is per standard procedure, a hearing will be scheduled for PRASA to appear before us on the official tabled annual reports and audit outcomes. Of course, we'll have to have an interaction with the AG prior to that, and I'm glad that Saki is here and he will note that, so that we can be in a position then to interact with that annual report. But this meeting this morning is scheduled to enable the committee to have an interaction with the Ministry of Transport on the observations of the committee following the oversight visits, which I've already alluded to. Moreover, of course, is the fact that there are issues that we did raise with PRASA when we were in Gauteng and when we were in the Western Cape for those oversight visits. There was, of course, a clash with dates, but thank the Office of the Minister for the continued interaction that we have had to make sure that we conclude on this matter as well. So, colleagues, good morning, and I hope you all had a blessed long weekend. I'm going to now take this opportunity, welcome the Minister of Transport, Minister Mbalula, and his team who are here this morning. There is a presentation that was sent, but I'm advised that it's a speaking note presentation, so it won't be flighted. But if there's a need for it to be flighted, then we will definitely do so. But I think because there are issues that we had raised with PRASA when we met, and of course the ministerial office team was present as well, so they saw what we saw, and I'm sure that they have briefed the minister accordingly. Suffice it to say, Minister, we are very, very worried and concerned about the state of the affairs of PRASA, particularly around the infrastructure, which continues to find itself bearing the brutal brunt of vandalism on one hand, neglect on the other, amongst other factors which have contributed to the kind of derelict infrastructure that we saw. And of course, the situation in the Western Cape, well, it's shocking is an understatement to see the kind of invasion which has taken place on the rail tracks and the adverse effects that that has had on the access of the rail services, train services for communities such as Khayelitsha, for example. And of course, the cost factors involved in the operation, which would have to be employed to move the 1,000 odd families, households, I say, at Langa, the 10,000 plus in Philippi, is an indication of a railway system under siege. And we are, as a committee, you know, very, very worried at all those things, and hoping that the turnaround strategy will yield results. And I think maybe the final point, which was a point of heightened observation by the committee, is the adverse effect of the cancellation of the security contract and what that meant for PRASA. Of course, we understand that the contract was irregular. However, the phasing out of that irregular contract had the kind of consequences we see now. And we've made the observation that SASSA had a irregular contract with CPSNet1, which the Constitutional Court declared to be invalid, but an application was made to the court to allow for a structured phase out as to not interrupt the disbursement of funds and grants to South Africans. We do not see the same kind of proactiveness on the part of PRASA when that emerged to have ensured a smooth transition. So, Minister, those are just some of the observations. Colleagues will come in as soon as the Minister is done, but I wanted to give a sense that we are not happy with the state of affairs as things stand now at PRASA and so far as the maintenance of infrastructure is concerned. Suffice it to say that we are very impressed with the operations at Kibela, and that is something which we are quite happy about. So, Minister, let me then hand over to you. And colleagues, good morning and welcome to this meeting. As soon as the Minister is done, I will hand over to you. Minister Mbalula, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, Mr. Mkululeko Hlengwa, and the members of SCOPA. I'm with the Acting Director General, Mr. Mthunzi Madia, and as well as the Deputy Director General of Rail, Mr. Ngwako Makaipea, and the two advisors, Mr. Kaiser Khoza, Special Advisor, and Mr. Lawrence Venkile, and the Chief of Staff, Mr. Tsululi Jaka, and the Parliamentary Liaison, Ms. Thandi Mpondo. So that will be my delegation to SCOPA this morning. In response to the issues you have raised, Chair, we remain seized with the arduous task of getting PRASA back on track following years of subpar performance, failure to spend on its capital programs, and corruption. Our eye remains on the ball, and we continue to hold the board accountable for delivery on the targets we had prioritized in the shareholder compact we had concluded for 2021-2022 financial year. Among the key targets we had agreed to following years of amorphoraging critical engineering and project management capacity is stabilizing the company by filling key vacancies at senior management level. This includes recovering commuter rail operations in the 10 priority corridors while paying serious attention to operational safety and security. A number of critical positions are occupied by acting incumbents. However, progress has been made towards filling these vacancies. The following key positions have acting incumbents. The group CEO position became vacant following a decision of the board to terminate the contract of the group CEO. The board has since advertised the vacancy in March 2022 and has given the filling of this vacancy a priority. Mr. David Mpelo is currently acting as Group CEO. The Chief Human Capital Officer became vacant in July 2021 following the passing of the incumbent, Ms. Thandeka Mapicha. The vacancy will be advertised when the new organizational design is implemented. This is one of the vacancies that may be affected by the new operating model that introduces a shared service model, among others. Ms. Nonhlanhla Gondowe is currently acting as Group Human Capital Officer. The Chief Procurement Officer position has been vacant July 2021. The vacancy was advertised in March 2022. Mr. Willie Matebula, seconded from National Treasury, has been acting since June 2021. The target is to fill the vacancy by June 2022. The chief executive officer, Prasa Ray, became vacant in July 2021. The vacancy will only be advertised upon implementation of the new organizational structure, as it is one of those whose job design will be affected by the new operating model. Mr. Nelson Malefane is currently acting in that position. The Chief Executive Officer Prasa Kress position became vacant in November 2021 following mutual separation with the incumbent. The vacancy will only be advertised upon implementation of the new organizational structure, as it is one of those whose job design, like others, have been affected by the new operating model. Ms. Annette Lindeke is currently acting in the position. The chief audit executive position has been vacant since November 2021. The vacancy was advertised in March 2022. The target is to fill the vacancy by June 2022. Mr. Jeff Mathangu is currently acting in that position. The group chief security officer position has been vacant since November 2021. The vacancy was advertised in March 2022. The target is to fill the vacancy by June 2022. The safety nominated manager position has been vacant since November 2020. The vacancy was advertised in March 2022. The target is to fill the vacancy by June 2022. Mr. Temba Mahanya is currently acting in the position. The group company secretary position has been vacant since February 2021. The vacancy was advertised in March 2022. The target is to fill the vacancy by June 2022. There is no acting incumbent. The group chief financial officer is currently facing a disciplinary process. Mr. Brian Alexander is currently acting as CFO. The vacancies of the executive in the office of the group CEO and the group executive legal risk and compliance are subject to pending legal processes. The former is no acting incumbent, while Ms. Tato Tsautse is acting in the latter position. As on 28 February 2022, a total of 737 employees were acting in various roles across the Prasa Group at a cost of 8,843,649.77. Prasa currently has over 3,500 vacancies nationally. This represents a vacancy rate of 19%, which remains unacceptably high. This is a matter that remains on our radar, and progress on lowering this rate to acceptable levels will be monitored and reported on quarterly basis. Since the appointment of the board, we have been emphatic on the need to expedite the review of Prasa's organizational design and business model in order to make the necessary and suitable changes to the structure and model of the group. The review of the organizational design was undertaken by the board and subjected to independent assessment, which has since been concluded. The new operating model and organizational design will be implemented in a phased manner, commencing at the beginning of the new financial year. The key tenets of this new operating model are the following: develop a fit-for-purpose organizational design that is responsive to the business strategic drivers, ensure placement of employees in roles where their skills will be of maximum benefit to the company, introduce shared services model for support functions in order to improve inefficiencies, manage economies of scale, and ensure efficient staff utilization across across the company. Develop competency and skills catalog to ensure person job fit and avoid misplacements and duplication of roles. Vandalized infrastructure remains a critical challenge in the resumption of commuter and long-distance passenger rail services across the country. We are under no illusion that the flawed decision by the previous board to terminate security contracts without putting in place contingency plans played a role in exposing the Prasa environment to criminality and wanton destruction of public infrastructure. We did not hesitate to act against that board as the authority overall responsible for the management of Prasa. When the Group CEO was appointed in the last year, one of his key result areas was the implementation of a security plan that will protect Prasa assets and its rolling stock. The plan currently being rolled out is premised on increasing the number of boots on the ground to protect both commuters and the infrastructure. The 3,100 warm bodies that have since been recruited have been reinforced by contracted security to restore stability in security in securing Prasa assets. In addition to the recruitment, training and deployment of tool of trade for the security personnel, Prasa is rolling out security technology solutions. This entails national integration of technology platforms to enable central command and control access across Prasa, centralization of security systems, granular deployment of control rooms into a national and regional hierarchy. We have committed to returning to service the 10 priority commuter rail corridors by the end of 2022 calendar year. A key consideration in achieving this objective is achieving a quicker turnaround time in repairing vandalized stations and rehabilitating damaged infrastructure. However, challenges relating to the relocation of illegal settlements you were referring to as in inverted commas, households on the central line may affect our ability to return to full service this line before 2023. In valuable lessons have been learned from the experience of returning the Mabupani line and central line to service. Some of the most noteworthy delays have been due to procurement of the overhead traction equipment, OHT, transformers and pairway, internal challenges such as delays in the sittings of the relevant bid committees are being attended to by the board. We have sharply raised the matter with the board and will continue to monitor the progress. Significant progress has been made in projects undertaken in various corridors, which focus on the following work: packages in order to recover the infrastructure and bring back the rail service. The replacement of vandalized overhead traction and refurbishment of traction substations and tie stations, rehabilitation of vandalized signaling system, rehabilitation of damaged pairway, maintenance of OTMs, walling program on priority corridors, foot bridges or street-to-street bridges on Mabupani and central line corridors, rectification of station platforms, installation of backup fiber in identified corridors, refurbishment of vandalized station buildings. Gauteng, Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal have suffered the most devastating vandalism of rail infrastructure. The cost to Prasa to repair and rehabilitate the vandalized infrastructure is at the tune of 4,994 million 674,062 rands 88 cents. We have committed to the realization of the following key milestones by 31st March 2022. Power supply network on the Mabopane Pretoria corridor will be completed. All Gauteng overhead traction equipment and substation tenders will have been awarded, and construction work already started, except for Saulsville to Pretoria and Daveyton to Johannesburg, which require re-advertising. Tender for 150 kilometers of rail will have been awarded and purchase order issued. On-track machines contracts will have been finalized and work started. Overhead traction equipment work will be completed on the Cape Town Bellville Bontehaven line, as well as on the Pinelands Langa line, and services will resume by 31st March 2022, although work will still continue on the signaling. Electrical traction system will be restored on the Naledi, Johannesburg, Pienaarspoort, Pretoria, and Saulsville Pretoria lines by 31st August 2022. Electrical traction system will be restored on the Lerala Johannesburg line by 30th September 2022. Rails will have been replaced in identified sections on the KwaMashu-Durban line by 30th September 2022. In conclusion, Chair, we are continually strengthening the accountability of the board on the commitments they made, both in terms of the annual shareholder compact, its corporate plan, and annual performance plan. We monitor progress on this through the quarterly reports. We have directed the board to move at a brisker pace in implementing interventions that will not only rehabilitate the infrastructure, but also enable the deployment of the new trains across the country. And lastly, I want to characterize the vandalism. We have a vandalism that has taken place at PRASA as a result of a decision by the board. But after the board came the administrator and we moved to level 5 of COVID-19. And the contingency plan was supposed to be implemented by the administrator, which he did not. And then that affected severely the vandalism of the infrastructure as you see it now during the period of level 5 of the implementation of disaster management intervention. Thank you very much, Chair, and members of the board. Members of SCOPA. Thank you. Sorry.
All right. Thank you very much, Minister. All right, colleagues, I think that is the initial reaction of the Minister to the issues that had been raised and are before him. All right. Can I get hands, colleagues? All right, going once, going twice. Nikahle. There you go. Let me check our site office here. Right, Honorable Van Minen.
Thanks very much, Chair. So I'm just trying to get my video on. Hopefully, I can't see it. Hopefully, it is on. Okay, thanks very much, and thank you very much to the Minister. I think that I see I can't start my video. It seems to have problems. I'm going to try. There we go. That should work. Look, I think I speak for SCOPA. I unfortunately couldn't make the Cape Town visits, but certainly when we were in Gauteng, the train production site was very impressive indeed. I think the concern is that looking at the actual tracks on the ground, as it were, and the stations, particularly the stations that we went to where we were not scheduled to stop, and we saw how bad things were there. there's very much a concern that one's going to end up with really very, very smart new trains, but nothing to actually run them on, which is a huge concern. I mean, when we're seeing diesel locomotives being run because of issues with, A, with Eskom to electrify stations, and B, also with the appalling theft that has happened due to the security contracts being cancelled, it really leads to enormous concerns about the viability of PRASA to really continue. I have two questions at this point. The new operational model, we've been hearing a lot about that. There's an awful lot on pause, not just individual positions, but also obviously, you know, an issue with the 19% vacancy rate, which is almost a, you know, it's a fifth basically of all employees are non-existent. When is the new operational model likely to be completed? And then when is it likely to be implemented? What is that process? And the second question I have for the Honourable Minister is he talks about acting against the previous board. What actions have been brought against the previous board? What progress has been made with that? And what is the hoped-for outcome of acting against the previous board? Because quite honestly, what we're seeing is a destruction of a company and an organization that really should be getting South Africa rolling. It can get trucks off the road. It can get goods onto trains. It really can get the wheels of the economy unjammed. So it is vital that we actually see this institution come back to life. Thank you.
All right. Colleagues, maybe let's take two members at a time so that nothing gets lost. And then we'll, yeah, all right. So Honorable Samia.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And
Sorry, Chair. I've switched off my video, so without your permission, so so that we can get enough bandwidth.
No, Minister, that's perfectly in order. I think all of us are familiar with the challenges of network and so on. It's no problem at all, Minister. Abu Sam, you may proceed.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, colleagues, and the minister and his team. For me, I've had an experience when we had to visit PRASA, and we had the opportunity to look into its own infrastructure and the story behind what is mainly found in the number of books, whether is it the Auditor General's reports, and we could justify such a situation by looking into derailed rail lines, which tell a story of how the infrastructure has over time been destroyed, the ability of the rail network to carry the populace from whatever in terms of facilitation for the movement of goods and people, how that has been destroyed.
Samia, I think we've lost you there.
Mainly on the loss of...
I think you need to go back a little bit. You were on the part of saying to move the populace, and I think that's where we lost
okay.
you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Chair. You see, such a derailed functionality and of operations of PRASA, which brings in a sort of story of inability to move goods and people throughout the country and to facilitate the economy in a way which is a acceptable through such movements. Well, because of the decisions which have been made by the previous board, looking into the matters that relate to security of such infrastructure, a massive infrastructure which has been built over time, even the new buildings in terms of introducing some new infrastructure, if you would have gone to Mamelodi, you'd see in earnest how it is to destroy what has been in movement, which is a cause of pain to a number of communities which have met when we were moving right through the area in Gauteng. That pain, that sorrow, brings in the urgency of wanting to see action into bringing that mode of transport into action. I think the previous speaker has illustrated the goodness out of what is happening at PRASA, the new locomotives, which are somewhat an indication of what the country in motion and development could do when it earnestly commits itself in doing what is right. And the level of action, even into your depots, the first class depot environment, where your trains would come in and get out, you see, would be fixed this way and that way. But the nerve is on the absence of those who are supposed to see that institution working. As you have illustrated, Minister, the acting positions are somewhat simmering, and it looks like the institution has overtaken by acting individuals more than seeing a functionality which is going to be guaranteed over time. So the urgency and speed there is very necessary. Getting into the Western Cape, in Cape Town in the most, where you have seen the derelict, you see infrastructure and how things could be destroyed, not only necessarily by the institution, looking to the movement of people on the rails, building their own informal settlements there, which has brought in a question as to how can we probably in our oversight begin to see the collaboration between the Minister of Transport, the Metro, Cape Town Metro, the Department of Human Settlements, so that there could be some urgent agreement as to how people could be moved to settle where there is a space for settlement, and leave the railway line for the rail to operate in a way for safety, for courage of these communities who want to be ferried from work and back home. So in earnest, even if your board would want to do its own work, as they do, I want to give them credit in that instance. And the questions which I had as to how you would see, as a point of an example, the chair of the board, who would be viewed as being at a risk of being more operational than strategic in terms of work. But when you see an institution which is being saved from collapse by having people who are acting in a number of positions, starting from the group CEO down the stream, which begins to turn things around having a board which is going to be more functional on the strategic level and balance that up with the actual tactical and technical staff which ought to be operated by those who are employed anyway. So the minister, the massive illustration of this kind of a situation really requires some form of urgency to act on different environments. One, matter of security. Two, matters of engagement with other parties which I would want to propose even here, that we could facilitate that kind of a meeting between these entities, your metro, yourselves, department, and the Department of Human Settlement, and if need be, the department that deals with matters of land, so that we attend to this kind of a situation, which might spread unabated, to find people who are going to be residing on the rail line, mainly in the Cape Town, the Western Cape area, which would bedevil the quite necessary operation in as far as your train services are concerned. So my lamentation is a lamentation which sought to bring in a sense of saying, how urgent could you act around such, and how could you as well bring the previous board into book around their matters which were ill-conceived, which has brought in some kind of a consumptive, high-ranked financial ability of PRASA going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, colleagues. Minister, can you respond in your team to those two sets of questions from the members? And then Honourable Bukas, you will come in after that.
Thank you, Chair. Van Minen, Honorable Van Minen, as I had alluded, the modernization project is gaining traction with the upgrade of infrastructure. The recruitment has already commenced. The model will be completed by the end of this current financial year, and recruitment will commence from 1st of April 2022. We acted on the previous board by dismissing the previous board, as we believed it did not live up to its fiduciary obligations. We have no basis to take any further action against that board. We appointed the administrator, which has been found in law to be flawed, and we rectified that by appointing the current board led by Mr. Leonard Ramatlakane. Honorable Somyo, the challenges at PRASA and the deterioration of infrastructure happened over time. Some of these challenges were detailed in the Public Protector's Report titled Derailed. The work we are doing is both to rehabilitate the vandalized infrastructure and modernize the environment. PRASA is a capital intensive company, and therefore you need proper structures in terms of procurement and SVM, which that capacity has been depleted over time. As we all know, even from the state capture report. At PRASA, we have about, through the Operation Zivese that they are implementing, which is now undergoing its second phase, it has been uncovered that 3,000 ghost workers were found in the system at PRASA. And then payment of salaries was stopped as of last year for these ghost workers. I cannot agree more with Honorable Somyo on the agency to move with speed in restoring the services as we rebuild the infrastructure. We have introduced reinforcements in security This includes walling in some sections and substations. The Cape Town situation is receiving priority. Through a collaborative effort, we are driving with the city of Cape Town. I just came from Cape Town 2 weeks ago. We are going back there. We've got a collaborative effort between ourselves and the national departments of human settlement, as well as public works, to help us get land for these people to be relocated. And if they are not moving, we are moving ahead as we speak. In the next coming weeks, we are going to see that from Langa to Philippi, we are going to have to undertake the mission of walling or fencing the railway lines so as to allow trains to operate, whilst the problem of resettlement of these people is being resolved. We cannot go beyond July on this project. We are happy with Mabupani. Since Mabupani has been introduced, our security plan model is working. There's not been a single vandalism, and then the security has been perfect and excellent in terms of Mabupani. We hope to achieve the same with Central Line. Central Line is very critical because we've got volumes of people there, particularly the working class, who are now using other means, which means our people are now working for transport. It is a matter that we are getting into it, by all means necessary to get the trains back on track there and secured. So this is what we actually doing. The operational model in terms of will be implemented in the next financial year, April 2022, and the principles include shared services model, competency, and skills alignment. So I suppose we will also come back and report on the progress with regard to that. I've reported in my opening remarks that this has been commissioned, and that work has been completed, and we are ready to go in terms of the new organizational model when it comes to PRASA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. Right, Honorable Bukas and Honorable Lees.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Minister, for your input. Firstly, Chair, I think you must aid me on that site platform because I'm a new member and I'm not aware of that platform. Chair, my concern is about the vacancy rate and the fact that most of the employees acting higher grades are performing more than one job. The question, therefore, is, Chair, how will that influence the commitment in the moral of that employees, but also the impact on their PMDS? Then, Chair, there was two reasons for not filling key vacancies, but the Minister in his input fill us in about the process of the new organizational structure that is finalized. I just want to know, are there any time frames attached to that phases for us to monitor the implementation? Then the other reason for not filling was the legal processes that is underway. I just want to establish what is the status of the legal processes. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to come in, can I? You indicated me after Honorable Bierkes. So good morning. Nyabongai. My apologies for being late. I've had a very useful and productive meeting or sitting with the Portfolio Committee on Transport on the state of roads in Okotlambo, which is in my constituency. So my apologies for being late. Mr. Chairman, The minister has indicated that they've identified 3,000 ghost employees, and that's good work. I mean, I'm sad that somehow they got into the system, which is an indication the system is broken if you can have so many ghost workers or any ghost workers. But my question then is, as at the end of February this year, there were 16,985 employees of PRASA. Are the 3,000 included in that number, or have they already been removed? That's the first question, Mr. Chairman. Then the next question is, PRASA basically stopped operations for the entire lockdown period. We've had huge, massive vandalism taking place. And we've now got really limited operations going ahead. So my question is, what exactly have these 17,000 odd employees been doing for the last 2 years? What have they been doing? Have they been paid their full pay? And what have they been doing? Then the last question, Mr. Chairman, the minister indicates success on the Mabopane line, and we were there and we saw that there were operations taking place. But what we also saw was that, you know, overhead traction lines had been stolen and hadn't been replaced. So is it right to say it's successful if it's still running on diesel, or perhaps they have been since been replaced and we're back onto proper traction, electric traction, and that we're not relying on Transnet for diesel locos? Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Liz. Let me start with you. The Mabopane line is not dependent on locomotives of Transnet, and it's not diesel driven. So that is why it is very, very successful. The 3,000 that have been found is part of an ongoing process of what PRASA call Operation Zivez, meaning in a broken place and a mess like that, where you have ghost workers which you're not supposed to have, they implemented a project called Operation Zivez. And that Operation Zivez then have proven by last year, December, 3,000 people were being paid. And since last year, December, the salaries, I mean, of those people have been stopped. None of those people have come forward to claim that they have been stopped unfairly. Meaning, it's again a system of corruption within human resource, meaning somebody has orchestrated a scam to steal money from the organization. So that's how broken PRASA is. Honorable Liz is correct. In a normal company, you can't even afford to have one ghost worker. You have 3,000. And since December last year, stoppage was done on paying off those people. And none of those people have actually come forward to claim that they have been owed or something. I cannot confirm that the 3,000 is part of the 17,000 employees. As more detailed verification on who got paid and which bank account number linking who is being undertaken. So the forensic work, which is the second phase, will determine that, including how this grant scam has been implemented at PRASA. I'm just trying to get the question of Honorable Birkes. We have tried. I've taken your concern, Honorable Birkes, about the vacancy rate. We will impress on the board to ensure that acting arrangements do not demoralize employees. The board will brief SCOPA fully on the time frames relating to the implementation of the new model. The question of clearing the system of the ghost workers, that work is being undertaken and implemented as we speak, and I expect also the board to brief in detail SCOPA on that important work, because it's an important work, meaning there's been money that is going out of the system to pay ghost workers, which is a scam, a fraud undertaken at PRASA. So those will be my answers, Chair.
Right, thank you very much, Minister. Right, are there any other hands or follow-ups? Right, Minister, I think maybe just a few observations on my part. You know, the rail network generally, but the trains in themselves specifically, maybe the whole combo, in fact, is a jobs driver, and a necessary, you know, reality if things are to move in a scheme of things which is smooth and so on. So the whole rail network and trains are a national asset, and we are dependent on them. It was surprising to us, though, that none of the sites where, you know, the trains are housed, stored, repaired, parked, none of those are national key points. And maybe it may sound like a cosmetic label, given recent historic events that have happened. But also at the same time, it attaches the kind of seriousness to the resource and the infrastructure and the assets. And so to check as to whether that is something that is being considered, particularly from a safety point of view and from a intergovernmental, interdepartmental dispensation of resources with the assistance of working with the SEPs to secure those trains. You know, Honorable Faninan makes the point that we've got beautiful trains being manufactured and assembled at Nigel, at the Kibela site. But of course, we don't have, you know, to the extent to which is desirable, a functional railway system. Those assets need to be protected. And currently, you are left to the devices of really your own internal arrangements and process of security without what I can only term the state's backing, insofar as, you know, heightened, security presence and visibility around the key areas of functionality, for functionality rather, at PRASA and the railway line. So I think that is something that needs to be looked at, but it would really want to hear the minister's outlook on that. The second point, Minister, is the security contract that was cancelled, and in the absence of a sustainable, viable contingency plan has had a convoluted ripple effect for PRASA, and the outcomes are, well, you know, as disastrous as things stand now. But we do not get a sense that there is an urgency, for lack of a better phrase, or an appetite for consequence management around that particular decision. And it is one which, as I'm saying, has had, you know, devastating effects on PRASA. The third aspect that I'd like to look at, Minister, is there's a sense that the intelligence services of the country may not have applied themselves wholesomely and holistically to the problems at PRASA. Because what is quite clear from the vandalism we witnessed is that this is a very targeted operation in certain aspects of people who know exactly where the key critical infrastructure or infrastructure aspects are at PRASA. So it is not difficult to write off the presence of an organized syndicate to derail PRASA. And so it would be it's something which we believe requires attention, because a non-functional railway system automatically breeds the necessity for alternative transport usage. And what is happening is that these are not random, well, I suppose there may be aspects of random vandalism. But also at the same time, we cannot rule out the possibility, a very strong one at that, of an organized syndicate which is targeting PRASA. So I think we would really be wanting to get a sense of the interactions, particularly at a political level, in government that you are having insofar as dealing with this particular aspect is concerned. And the final one now is the observation, Minister, of the urgent need of reforms in logistic movement of goods, the road to rail, dispensation. And I know this may be probably an aside issue, but it's linked to, you know, functional railways. And of course, there would have to be collaboration with Transnet and so on. But I think, you know, transport is a key factor here. And I'm a regular user of the N3 carriageway, Durban, Peter Maritzburg, Johannesburg route, traveling there on constituency work most of the time, particularly to Uthukela district. And the very negative impact of the increased and heightened loads of trucks on that road, on the road infrastructure, on one hand, to the bullying that truck drivers actually inflict on other drivers, the poor state of roadworthiness of those trucks, and really very minimal interventions, particularly at night. And I really just wonder, Minister, whether don't we now need a more deliberate and more focused outlook towards easing the traffic flow on the N3, amongst others. But that situation is just not viable. It's a perennial headache. And the state of those trucks, but also the impact it's having on the road infrastructure in itself. notwithstanding the other elements I've alluded to, is cause for concern. But I think the main three issues for the purposes of today are the ones I've raised. This one is a chance, by the way, to take advantage of the fact that you are here. But it probably speaks to a broader, agenda of traffic integration and a deliberate effort from road to rail. Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I agree, Chair, that the entire network is a national, should be classified. As a national asset. The network and the infrastructure are critical assets that should be classified as national key points. And the collaboration with law enforcement authorities, among others, intended to ensure that these assets received maximum protection. That is what we hope to get out of that. This is a matter we intend to place before the net joints. The security contracts, Chair, that were created, that were cancelled, created a difficult situation in terms of new procurement. The cancellation itself. So the question of consequence management on the part of the previous board in taking those decisions, it's a matter that we can pursue in terms of ensuring that those people are declared as delinquent as board members. But you as COPA, you know for yourself that part of the reason we had to do away with that board was because it was not helping us in any way. Vandalism, indeed, at PRASA is an orchestrated, well-planned operation. How is it planned? It is planned because there is a syndicate operation. It has been proven over time. They steal copper cables, melt them in the laboratories in our townships, and ship them out of Mozambique and East Asia. That is what they do. And they work with some employees of PRASA. Where do we get this from? Some time back, we busted this operation and then with PRASA security in Heidelberg, in Gauteng province. And I went to see for myself this operation. Recently, you would have seen where we busted and went to scrap metal companies. And the most important thing we are looking at, led by DTI at the present moment, is to consider the law in relation to scrap metal in South Africa, of which at the present moment we are totally open, and those who are undertaking this, may it be at Eskom and everywhere else who are stealing stuff from these companies, we can't prosecute in law and all of that. So I've gone there, I've seen what they do. This indicates they pack these things and then ship them out of the country. And when you get to the scrap metal area or place, you will realize that the syndicate is very big. And you can't, when you get there, say this copper come from PRASA or come from Eskom. That's what is happening there. So we are dealing with organized syndicate. That is ongoing. It's a criminal activity. And its operational tactic is the same. They collect through small units in the township and feed into bigger companies. And when you see a bigger company dealing with scrap metal, you've got nothing to suspect. But that is where our staff is going. So we've got at the level of working with the police and other departments, tighten the law around this particular matter. We are dealing with syndicates, serious syndicates at PRASA. The second part, Chair, of this vandalism is the vandalism where people built shacks as the urbanization is visiting us. They built shacks, and then during level 5 lockdown, as Honorable Lees also alluded to this, they then vandalized stations, took the roof, go and build shacks. And then took the roof, window frames, and all of that. So that work is not a work of syndicate. It is generally our people who are basically took advantage of a property that was not protected during level 5, brought it down, and steal all of this. And then it was not protected because the board took a decision to implement correctly. So the decision of the AG, and then did not put anything in place. And what did we do with regard to this? We then unveiled a security plan, which meant we have to employ people. We employed 3,100, which PRASA did. But over and above that, we also brought law enforcement. Can we have security backing from law enforcement effectively, like the old railway system in the country? From where I'm seated, I think that is not achievable. We do have problems of security, boots on the ground, fighting crime all around. We do have railway police about plus or minus 2,000. So, I mean, railway police dedicated to PRASA. Will SAPS give us more numbers, canines and all of that? It won't. PRASA would have been vandalized further if we did not say to them, go and defend what is left at PRASA during the riots. That's why Bramfontein is intact, is intact, Park Station is intact, because intelligence had told us already at that time that this place is Volmartin and all the areas, Bramfontein, are targeted to arson by the rioters. And then once security was activated, and they did attack, by the way, Park Station, but they met rubber bullets from private security companies that PRASA brought into place because of the call we made that go and protect our assets, otherwise they are going to be attacked. Level 5, we did not do that. Mpondo did not go and secure our assets as we called upon on him as the administrator, go and secure the assets, get some of our entities to help you procure security companies to protect, because the vandalism was happening daylight. You see, people will be sending stuff on social media, even to myself as the media, repeatedly. Daylight, minister, now the station in Tembisa has been vandalized, the roof is taken. This did not happen at night, it happened during the day. Germiston, I visited those areas, Cliptown and all of that. Now, that is taking us off the rail, because instead of spending money on modernization, we've got to take part of that money to go and fix the vandalism of the stations, which were vandalized by our people, among others, during level 5. to fix those stations. That work is continuing. But over and above that, there is a criminal aspect we've got to deal with at Brasa, which is permanent. It's a challenge of scrap metals, stealing of our staff that we utilize on our rail infrastructure. How do we protect that in terms of the law and all of that? So from the point of view of the law, we have said that these people must be charged with serious economic offenses like economic sabotage. The law has been amended. If you are found to have done certain things and good work has been done in terms of gathering evidence and all of that, already there are cases that have appeared in court where people have been charged with this, and sentencing has also happened. Because as long as we get minnows, people just, you know, like vandals and so on, and then we bring them to the courts and for them to be charged, and then they are charged with theft and all of that, this will continue. But we know that these vandals are sent by kingpins to steal and vandalize our infrastructure and steal copper and all of those. So we need an approach in terms of the law, but at the same time, PRASA itself must spend money and resources on securing the property of PRASA, which is what is happening now. You know, Mabupani was being fixed, and then immediately the criminal element came in. And the reason you see what you are seeing in Mabupani now, trains running smooth, no vandalism and all of that, is because that line is well protected. So you've got armored vehicles patrolling all the time, quick reaction. So the cutting of cables and stealing of copper cables and all of that is not happening there, because there's been the security plan we're talking about is being implemented full force at that place. Movement of goods from road to rail. Tomorrow we are finalizing in cabinet the discussion on the rail policy, which among others is gonna bring into full effect the implementation of this. The migration of freight from road to rail is key. It's a key project we are undertaking, working closely with Transnet. This project was adversely affected by Transnet losing the market share as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. But we are slowly rebuilding this market share. We have also refined our plans to accelerate the migration of freight from road to rail in line with the performance agreement we have concluded with the president. This will deal with the proliferation of trucks on our national roads. So, Honorable Chair, I agree with you on this particular point. It is true also, Chair, that PRASA, like I said, has been targeted by organized syndicates. So you can't resolve that problem overnight. You've got to have the law fixed to deal with that. But over and above that, you've got to have your security intact to deal and combat these syndicates and work with the police, you know, because this is big in South Africa. To melt some tons of copper cable in the street value, a person is paid close to over 100,000 of rents. And so that's what they do. These chaps who are runners on the ground, they melt this, they steal this copper, working with PRASA employees. It's a big syndicate in South Africa. they steal from Eskom and all of that, and then they take this thing and then they ship it out to Mozambique and then to East Asia, they get paid. Easy money. It's just like drugs, you know. You've got runners, but you know they are kingpins. We busted laboratories when we're in the police in Soweto, in the backyards. The same as in this field we are in now. We still have laboratories operating in the backyards, in the townships, melting copper and shipping it out of the country. The Zamazamas you've got. It's a whole syndicate thing, you know, and selling stuff and then making easy money out of it. So our product and also our company is exposed to syndicates of this nature. And our security must respond to that. But we as ministers, myself leading DTI, we've got to deal with this matter alongside the same way they are dealing with it in Kenya. And make it a point that when I get into your scrap yard and you've got a scrap metal, the law must say that you've got no business to trade in copper. And once we find that in your backyard, we close that scrap yard immediately. I've visited this. I've seen this for myself. You can see that the network, the syndicates, the operational modus operandi is out there. You can see it, how these people operate and so on. So our network, in terms of the corridors where they are running, is totally exposed to this. So we have to respond to that, Chair. I agree with you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Minister, for that. I think there was just one issue I forgot, maybe, and I know it's been dealt with. But Minister, I think we need to confront the elephant in the room, and this is a conversation we're going to have, and I would imagine this is a conversation that you will have at government cabinet level, at the executive level yourselves. We've got a situation of informal settlement sprawling on railways, and instead of it getting, being abated or being pushed back on them, settlement expands. When we were in Philippi, as we were walking on the rail track, the acting CEO pointed to a new structure and said, when I was here, this was not here. I think we were in Langa when Honorable Hadebe pointed out that when he had been there, he arrived with, on this oversight to find new structures had been erected. Now, of course, there's the, ongoing registration and verifications of persons who are there as part of the planning that has to happen for their movement. But quite clearly, the opportunism to be there with the hope to benefit in whatever will happen exists. That's the first point. But the gist of it, Minister, is we're now having to budget and plan for an eventuality which arises out of criminality. An invasion of the rail tracks is breaking the law. And I just can't find the logic which somehow places the burden on PRASA, on the state to say, well, you broke the law, but since you broke the law, we must now find alternative accommodation. Because all rights come with responsibilities and rights come with consequences. in how they are played out and how they are exercised. And whilst every citizen has got a right to shelter and the observation of human rights not to leave people displaced, it may find itself running the risk of an abuse of rights. And the costs to this thing, I mean, by the estimations given to us just on those two rail tracks, comes close to R1 billion. Now, I'm saying this is a conversation that we need to have, because there also has to be citizenry accountability on this front. It's just illogical. And unless the interpretation of the law is corrected in this regard, then this will become a precedent setter, and it will continue to leave the infrastructure of the state susceptible to invasion, with a view to say, when we are here, we then are entitled to be moved somewhere else, and the state must bear the cost of that relocation without any consequences for the fact that this is a violation of the law. It's a very complex and difficult conversation, I know, and one which you must tread very carefully on. But I think it's one which must not be anchored in sloganeering, you know, that people say, no, it would be a violation of human rights, without an extensive, you know, probing of how did we get here. And the bottom line is that the law has been broken. There are now 10,000 households, you know, as I said, households on the Philippi line. And it's common cause that those people should not have been there to begin with. And so it goes to the broader, you know, outlook I've been speaking about, Minister, of securing these railway lines in the national interest as national assets. But I find that we, unless we have the difficult conversations, we will continue going around in circles. And the invasion of the railway lines must be first and foremost be declared as an illegal act. It's a criminal act. And then consequences must flow out of that before we sort of just bypass accountability and saddle the state, with now a dilemma. Because this is what this is, because that invasion has resulted in the destruction of infrastructure, which, if those people are to be moved, the state would still have had to now incur costs to rehabilitate and fix those lines in order to make them functional, sustainable, and viable to meet the demands of travel for the working class. The people of Khayelitsha, for example, whom, you know, are unable to now access trains because of the, you know, illegal invasion of a railway in Philippi, are bearing the brutal brunt of this thing. So I'm just, you know, at that point to say, when do we as a country begin asserting, you know, equal emphasis on the consequences and responsibilities that come with rights, as we do with the fundamental important focus we have on rights? Because I think that there has to be a fair balance between the two. The rights are not open-ended, because now you are literally, you know, invading a rail track to put a gun to the head of the state, to say, well, if you want us gone from here, go and resettle us somewhere, and it's at your cost, it's your baby to feed. Otherwise, we're not moving from here. That can't be right. It can't be right. But I'm just putting it, ministers, to say, it's an observation we've made, but it requires the difficult conversations. if we are really to build a South Africa of consequences, and one which is just genuinely credible in its outlook in when it speaks about rights, not to speak about them in a vacuum, but in the context in that rights are also enabler to development, and when they are abused, they become a problem in how they're exercised. So I just wanted to, if the minister wants to react to that, I'm sure he's most welcome to, but it's an observation we made, and the law has to help us here in itself, because there's no money for these things to just willy-nilly continue going on as if imali vele Zulu njengeman. Thanks, Mr. If you want to react to that, if not, it's fine.
No, Chair, I agree with you. It's a difficult conversation indeed. We need to deal with, it's a dilemma. Because our constitutional democracy has also brought about some of these things, and they are now with us. We may want to look into that going to the future as a country in the context of dealing with lawlessness. But in my view, Chair, in all honesty, I think the crisis we are dealing with of settlement is an exposure of a company that was in a state of disaster called PRASA. Because the first encroachment you see, where was PRASA security? Where were these security companies? We are paying these people exorbitant monies for no value. One time I went to Park Station, I found a tap, broken. And then there was water all over the toilets and all of that. And it's not security to fix the taps, but that thing has been going on. And Park Station, Cape Town Central, KZN, those areas should be classified as national key point. And yes, something was happening, a tap broken. It was like it's business as usual. There's no security, there's nothing. That is actually happening. And then government is paying these people exorbitant and a lot of money through contracts, and then you don't get value for money. Here we're sitting with a problem of invaders in Cape Town. Where was PRASA security when the first shack was erected next to the railway line? They should have taken them out, because they know that in terms of the law, these people are protected. Once they gather in numbers and all of that, my cousin's sister and all of that, we do verification. We've got to ensure that the numbers don't grow. Now, we are now in the business of human settlement as a railway, passenger railway company. We work overtime. You don't know whether these things are pre-planned. Just to put us into a state of disaster that we are in. But nonetheless, I agree with you, Chair, on the issues you are raising, and I think they need further interrogation. But on our part, in terms of PRASA itself, something like that shouldn't happen going into the future if we have security at PRASA, something called security. You've got people there who are fighting for contracts and all of that, but look at the value they add to the company for the contracts they got from PRASA. Nothing. It's a disaster day in and day out that we have witnessed over a period of time. So a well-oiled machinery and company, I dealt with, as my concluding point, with a problem when I was in the police at the airport, as you all know. I personally was involved in dealing with that matter. I was like a commissioner of police. People who had been robbed, I went to see a family, not a family, tourists, a bus full of tourists robbed from the airport, tourists from Netherlands. I had to go and speak to them and all of that. And then people who have been followed from the airport to their houses and all of that, and then robbed by criminals. So we had to respond to this and nip it in the bud. And then more than 20 million was stolen in the red zone at the airport. National key point was not protected with the police and all of that. When we arrived there, I frog marched all those cops, and I realized that part of the problem is that you cannot have police not rotating in a national key point, because they then become part of the criminal syndicate at the airport. Because through that airport, drugs are coming in, all illegal stuff is coming in, and cops are exposed to this easy money every day. So 6 months rotation system, and I deployed a general at the airport. And then we then started to operationalize the plan at the airport, tactical response and all of that. And now, during COVID, criminals tried to attack the airport, AXA. They didn't see the light of day. They couldn't, because the integrated security plan there is intact. And that's what we're trying to do here. PRASA has never had security, let alone having security companies, security director, chief of security at PRASA. PRASA has never had that thing. You just bring people who retired from the police, you deploy them at PRASA. People who are police are not trained as security, at least from SSA and all of that. Those are people who know deployment and understand security that you need there. And then we will look at this plan. I've spoken to the Minister of Defense whether or not we cannot deploy defense in our railway lines, but also it's not sustainable. PRASA must build its own internal security. It's going to be expensive, but we need that if we are to protect our assets. That's what PRASA needs. We did that with the riots. The state was overstretched between Gauteng and Johannesburg. And then we said to PRASA, PRASA, protect. Don't wait for the rioters to come and put Park Station into flames. Protect. And then they unleashed. Indeed, when the rioters came, they found PRASA security ready for them. So there was heavy stuff because police were overstretched. We don't have enough boots on the ground as much as we have expectations, but the expectations must be realistic. PRASA, AXA now have got their own securities that they need to strengthen their capacity to protect the commuters, but also to protect the assets of the company. That is what we need to do. And that is how we are going to realize prosperity and this matter of security being properly addressed going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Right, thank you very much, Minister. I think, colleagues, if there is no other issue, but Minister, let me maybe draw to your attention and PRASA's attention. At the Acacia Parliamentary Village, there's a rail there's a rail line which runs parallel to the Parliamentary Village Acacia station. On my last count, there are 8 structures that have been erected along the line of that rail line. And they, you know, it started with one, Jengobusho and Minister Babizan. You've got across from where they are, the a military fort right here. I will not be surprised in the if history is anything to go by, unless intervention is made. If those structures spill over onto the rail track and cause the problem that we currently experience. So let me just flag, I'm sure the colleagues who reside at Acacia know what I'm talking about. Right here, outside here, you know. So it goes to this thing of turning a blind eye when these things start out, and then acting surprised with shock when they mushroom into a catastrophe in the manner in which they have now been for PRASA. And I take the point, Minister, you're quite right. PRASA's got a responsibility to bear in this regard, in that these things happened on their watch. And there was a heightened level of a laissez-faire attitude to deal with them for a host of reasons, which they would still have to explain. But that's the one stream. Preventative measures need to take place now, and you need to nip this thing in the bud. Here's one classical example here on the Acacia railway line. As we speak right now, I'm sure when I leave, I'll do another count. It probably might be more than what it was 2 weeks ago. So that's the kind of dilemma that's there. The final point, Minister, I think it would be remiss of me, colleagues will attest, if I don't draw to your attention our disquiet at the attitude of some board members towards the Auditor General. It was an observation which played itself out in the meeting as we watched what I can only classify as a blow-by-blow offensive on the part of board members or a board member, we will put it out in the report, towards the Auditor General. And this is not to come out in an unfettered defense of the Auditor General, but we will stand on the side of the Auditor General unless, you know, information is put to us credibly so that the Auditor General is not conducting their work in a manner consistent with the law. But in this case, we don't have reason to believe that that's the case. And I would really hope, Minister, that this is something you look at, the relationship between PRASA and the Auditor General. And I want to, for the record, to say that the behavior we saw is totally unacceptable, and it is behavior which we fundamentally believe grinds against the grain of good governance, and one which seeks to undermine a Chapter 9 institution, and it will not be tolerated. There has to be a semblance of mutual respect and a professional conduct which must just play out. Because if that's the kind of attitude that is held at PRASA insofar as auditing is concerned by the AG specifically, then we've got every reason to be worried about the lack of seriousness which seemingly is applied to audit and the outcomes and the absence of a, you know, implementation of a audit action plan. And it was indicative of the strain which obviously prevails when we are not there, because I just fundamentally think the nerve cheek and audacity to behave in the manner in which it happened before us means that that's how daring the undermining is, that we don't care whether Parliament is here or not, we will continue on a trajectory of behaving in a manner which is, seeking to dictate terms of interaction which are irregular to the AG, and to dictate to the AG how the AG should do its work. So if it's not something that you have seen, Minister, but we should bring it to your attention, because it's at the heart of the challenges of governance which beset PRASA at this point. So I thought it would, whilst it's something we will definitely, put into our report and make recommendations accordingly, I thought it's only correct that I put it to you now, Minister, that we left that meeting very, very worried and concerned about the attitude, particularly, of a board member towards AG, who is tasked with the responsibility of, really, as far as I see it, being the link between the board and the AG, because they will interface more regularly than others. So I think that was the Audit and Risk Committee, if I'm not mistaken. So I just thought I should bring that to your attention, Minister, and thank you this morning for fielding our questions and the information that you have provided to enable us to close up our report on our oversight visit in January and in March to PRASA, Gauteng and Western Cape respectively. And we will endeavor to complete that report in earnest and have it served before the House and the recommendations, of course, acted on. And we will be considering the annual report of PRASA, because it has now been tabled to Parliament. Colleagues, I will hand over to you if there's anything you'd like to raise. If not, Minister, I'll give you an opportunity to make your concluding remarks if there are any. Colleagues, going once, you don't have to come in through the group. You can just speak on the platform, particularly Honourable Bukas. All right, Minister, concluding remarks on your side, if there are any, and then we'll call the meeting to an end.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and members of SCOPA. I think we are ready, working very hard to turn PRASA around to ensure that we deal with most of the challenges that you have presented to us. With regard to the board, we will consider the matters in terms of the conduct and so on, and we'll apply ourselves to it. We can't allow delinquency to run amok in our ports. We can't allow that. People must be professionals, and we appointed them on the basis of that. So if they are behaving in a particular way, we will have to deal with them as the shareholder. So we will deal with those issues, Chair. Thank you very much, and thank you to SCOPA. Thank you.
But, thank you very much, Minister, to you and your team this morning, acting DG, advisors, and so on. Minister, you've got an acting DG. You got to appoint to DG.
We are done with appointing the DG, so it's at the level of cabinet. UDG Obekona came through secondment from sports, and then his contract came to an end, so we didn't renew it. Yeah.
Okay. No, it's perfect. Yeah. All right, Minister, thank you very much. Colleagues, thank you. All we want, Minister, at the end of the day is for PRASA to serve the people, the majority of the people. This may sound politically incorrect in certain quarters. I couldn't be bothered. PRASA is far more strategically important than SAA. The majority of our people who live in the outskirts of economic activity, at the periphery of economic activity, because of historic reasons which were inconsistent with every semblance of human rights possible at the behest of the oppressors, rely on the daily on PRASA to be readily available to help them make ends meet for their families. And as you rightly said, Minister, the absence of a functional PRASA means that people are working for transport, they are working for travel, and not making ends meet on the most important things of their sustainable livelihoods. Flying is an elite form of travel. For a drop in the ocean minority of those that travel, PRASA is the backbone of this economy and the only readily available means of easy travel for the previously disadvantaged who find themselves presently disadvantaged. Therefore, the strategic importance of PRASA cannot be overstated. So if ever people spoke the language of bailouts, which is not our favorite language, but in the event that it was necessary, on a cost analysis of fairness and redress for access to the economy, the PRASA far outweighs SAA. And so the kind of energy that has been put into saving SAA must be put 10 times more into fixing PRASA for the good of our people who bear the brutal brunt of exclusion. So, Minister, thank you very much, and we will finalize our report and you'll receive it. Colleagues, happy Tuesday, and on that note, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.